You know that feeling when your doctor says everything looks normal, but your body is screaming that something is desperately wrong? You're not imagining it. Your body is speaking a language that standard medical tests weren't designed to translate. If you're experiencing headaches that arrive like clockwork when you think about the person you lost, if your chest tightens for no apparent reason, making you wonder if something's wrong with your heart, if you're exhausted despite sleeping, or can't sleep despite being bone tired, if your stomach churns, your shoulders carry invisible weights, or mysterious pains migrate through your body like they're searching for something, you're not losing your mind. Your body is doing exactly what it was designed to do. It's holding your grief for you, storing it in your muscles, your organs, your nervous system, waiting for you to finally listen. You've probably tried everything to make these symptoms go away. You've gone to doctors who ran tests and found nothing, or diagnosed you with conditions that somehow don't quite explain what you're experiencing. Maybe you've been handed prescriptions for pain relievers, sleep aids, or antacids that address the symptom but never touch what's underneath. You've probably tried to push through, telling yourself to be stronger, to focus on other things, to just get over it already. You might have thrown yourself into work, exercise, or staying busy, hoping that if you ignore your body long enough, it will stop bothering you. Perhaps you've even felt ashamed, wondering why you can't seem to heal like other people, why your grief seems to have taken up permanent residence in your physical being. And the most frustrating part, some of these things might have helped temporarily, but the symptoms keep returning, sometimes in new forms, like your body is determined to get your attention no matter what. Here is what nobody tells you. Those physical symptoms aren't the problem. They're the solution your body created when the real problem had nowhere else to go. And in this audio, I'm going to show you how to read your body's symptoms like a map, leading you directly to the specific emotional grief that needs your attention. You'll learn the sorrow-to-signal method, a practical framework for translating your body's physical language into actionable emotional healing steps. By the end of our time together, you'll understand why your body chose these particular symptoms, what they're protecting you from feeling, and most importantly, how to create safe release channels for the grief that's been building pressure inside you. This isn't about positive thinking or pushing through pain. This is about finally understanding what your body has been trying to tell you all along. But here's what I need from you. This only works if you commit to listening all the way through. Your mind might try to protect you by distracting you, telling you this doesn't apply to you, or pulling you toward checking your phone or thinking about your to-do list. That's normal. That's the same protective mechanism that created your physical symptoms in the first place. So I'm asking you to make a deal with yourself right now. For the next portion of this audio, you're going to stay present, even when it feels uncomfortable. Even when part of you wants to tune out. Your body has been waiting for you to hear this message. It's been speaking to you through pain and exhaustion and mysterious symptoms because it knew someday you'd be ready to listen. Today is that day. Are you ready? Take a deep breath, settle in to wherever you are, and let's begin. So why hasn't anything worked yet? Why do the headaches keep coming back, the chest tightness return, the exhaustion persist no matter how many doctors you see or how much rest you get? It's not because you're broken. It's not because you're not trying hard enough. It's because almost everything we've been told about dealing with physical symptoms of grief addresses only the surface of what's actually happening in your body. Most advice tells you to practice self-care, get more sleep, maybe see a therapist to talk about your feelings while simultaneously seeing a doctor for your physical symptoms. And look, those things aren't wrong, but they're treating your mind and body as separate entities with separate problems. You end up with a therapist helping you process emotions in one room, and a doctor prescribing medications for physical symptoms in another room, and nobody's connecting the dots between the two. It's like trying to stop a flood by mopping the floor while the pipes are still bursting. You're addressing the manifestation, not the source. The emotional work happens in isolation from the physical experience, and the physical treatment happens without acknowledging the emotional component. So you might make progress in therapy, genuinely working through your grief, but your body never gets the message.
Or you might find temporary relief from the physical symptoms, but because the underlying grief remains unprocessed, new symptoms emerge somewhere else. The migraine becomes digestive issues. The back pain becomes insomnia. Your body keeps finding new ways to speak the language your mind refuses to hear. But here's what makes this even more challenging. The real issue is that our entire culture and medical system are working against you recognizing this connection in the first place. We live in a society that has completely separated physical health from emotional health, as if they exist in different universes. When you walk into a doctor's office with chest pain, the system is designed to look for cardiovascular issues, not unresolved grief about your mother's death. When you complain of chronic fatigue, they run tests for thyroid function and vitamin deficiencies, not for the exhaustion that comes from carrying 3 years of unshed tears. The medical establishment, for all its brilliance, operates primarily within a framework that views the body as a machine with parts that break and need fixing, rather than as an integrated system where emotional experience directly shapes physical reality. And our culture reinforces this split at every turn. We have entire vocabularies for physical ailments, but struggle to name emotional experiences with the same precision. We're taught from childhood that emotional pain isn't quite as legitimate as physical pain. You can stay home from school with a fever, but not because you're overwhelmed with sadness. You can take medication for a headache without judgment, but taking time off work for grief beyond the allocated 3 to 5 bereavement days, that's seen as weakness, self-indulgence, an inability to cope. So we learn to translate emotional pain into physical symptoms, because that's the only language our culture grants legitimacy. Your body isn't betraying you by creating these symptoms. It's actually trying to help you by converting invisible emotional suffering into visible physical problems that others might finally take seriously. But this creates a trap where you end up genuinely suffering physically while the emotional source remains unaddressed and unacknowledged. Then there's what happens when you actually try to push through. When you feel that crushing fatigue or that tension headache building, and you tell yourself to just power through it, to be strong, to not let grief control your life, to get back to normal. And what happens? The symptoms intensify. That headache becomes a migraine. That fatigue becomes complete exhaustion. That tightness in your chest becomes a panic attack. When you try to force yourself past the physical symptoms without addressing the emotional content they're carrying, you actually make everything worse because you're adding a new layer of stress and suppression on top of the existing unprocessed grief. Your body is trying to get your attention, trying to tell you something crucial needs acknowledgement, and you're essentially telling it to shut up and work harder. This creates an antagonistic relationship with your own body, where every symptom feels like an enemy to defeat rather than a messenger trying to help you. You start to resent your body for failing you, for being weak, for not just functioning normally. And that resentment, that internal conflict, that's additional stress that your nervous system has to process, which dysregulates it further, which creates more symptoms, which you try harder to suppress, which makes everything worse. You've entered what I call the suppression trap, where the very strategies you're using to cope are actually feeding the cycle. But what's really happening underneath all of this, the thing that almost no one talks about, is what I call the grief-body disconnect. And understanding this changes everything. Here's what's actually occurring in your nervous system. When you experience profound loss, your brain and body prepare for an enormous emotional response. Grief, in its natural state, wants to move through you as a full-body experience, involving tears, sounds, physical release, shaking, the whole spectrum of somatic expression. But most of us, for very understandable reasons, don't feel safe enough to allow that full expression. Maybe you had to stay strong for your kids. Maybe you were at work when you got the news. Maybe you grew up in a family where emotional displays were shameful. Maybe you're just terrified that if you start crying, you'll never stop. So your mind does something extraordinary to protect you. It suppresses the emotional experience by converting it into physical symptoms. This isn't metaphorical. This is a measurable neurological phenomenon. Your brain literally reroutes the emotional pain into physical pain pathways. The grief you couldn't express as tears gets expressed as tension.
The sorrow that couldn't move through your voice becomes constriction in your throat. The overwhelming nature of the loss that you couldn't process emotionally gets experienced as overwhelming fatigue physically. And here's the devastating part. The longer this pattern continues, the more entrenched it becomes. Your nervous system starts to create a feedback loop where unprocessed sorrow literally rewires your pain pathways. Your body becomes increasingly sensitized to stress. Your nervous system gets stuck in a state of dysregulation, unable to return to baseline calm. The original grief becomes encoded not just in your memories, but in your muscle tension patterns, your breathing rhythms, your gut function, your immune response. Your body essentially becomes a hostage to unexpressed emotion, and it will continue producing symptoms, shifting symptoms, intensifying symptoms, until the underlying emotional content is finally acknowledged and released. And until you address this fundamental disconnect between where the pain originates in unprocessed grief and where it manifests in physical symptoms, nothing will provide lasting relief. You'll keep treating symptoms while the source continues generating new ones. This is why everything you've tried so far hasn't worked, not because the approaches were wrong, but because they weren't addressing the actual mechanism at play. Now let me introduce you to the sorrow-to-signal method, a completely different way of relating to the physical symptoms that grief has carved into your body. Here's what most people miss about grief and the body. We've been treating physical symptoms as problems to eliminate when they're actually messengers trying to deliver crucial information. Your headache isn't randomly attacking you. Your chest tightness isn't a malfunction. Your digestive issues aren't just stress. They're your body's incredibly precise language, showing you exactly where grief has gotten stuck and what specific emotional work will set you free. Think about it this way. When you stub your toe, you don't wonder what your toe is trying to tell you. You know it's saying, "That hurt, pay attention, protect me." But we've completely lost the ability to read our body's signals when it comes to emotional pain. We've been taught that physical symptoms need medical solutions, and emotional pain needs to just go away. What if instead your body is actually brilliant at showing you a map to your healing, and you simply haven't learned to read the language yet? The sorrow-to-signal method works because it treats your body as an ally rather than an enemy. Every ache becomes a signpost. Every tension pattern becomes a clue. Every symptom becomes an invitation to do the specific emotional work that will resolve it at the root level. You're not going to push through, override, or medicate away these signals. You're going to learn to read them, respond to them, and ultimately transform them. The method is built on a framework I call TRACE, and each letter represents a stage in the process of transforming trapped grief into conscious healing. TRACK means creating a detailed map of your body's patterns so you can see the connections between your symptoms and your emotional life. RECONNECT means establishing direct communication with your body, asking it what it's holding rather than telling it to be quiet. Activate means engaging your nervous system through movement to process what talking and thinking alone cannot resolve. Channel means giving your body permission to complete the interrupted physical responses that grief demanded but circumstances wouldn't allow. And evolve means building a sustainable practice that prevents future accumulation, so your body learns it can express emotion directly instead of converting it to physical symptoms.
This isn't a quick fix, it's a translation system. You're learning to become fluent in the language your body has been speaking all along. Let me walk you through each stage so you can start using this method immediately, even if you've been disconnected from your body for years. The first stage is track. You're going to document your physical symptoms in a way you probably never have before, in what I call a body map journal. Here's how this works. Get a notebook, and on the first page, draw a simple outline of your body, front and back, like a paper doll. Nothing artistic required. Now, for the next 7 days, every time you notice a physical symptom, any sensation that's uncomfortable, painful, tight, or just feels off, you're going to mark it on your body map. Use different colors if you want. Note the time of day, rate the intensity on a scale of 1 to 10.
But here's the crucial part that makes this different from symptom tracking you might have done before. For each physical sensation, you're going to look back 24 to 48 hours and write down any grief triggers, emotional memories, difficult conversations, or anniversary dates that preceded it. Let me give you an example. Sarah started getting severe tension headaches every Wednesday afternoon. When she started tracking, she realized they appeared exactly 48 hours after her Monday evening calls with her sister, the only other person who remembered their mother. The calls themselves seemed fine, even comforting, but her body was holding something her conscious mind was dismissing. Or take Marcus, who had unexplained lower back pain that doctors couldn't diagnose. When he tracked it, he discovered it intensified every time he had to make a decision about his late father's business, decisions his father used to make. His back was literally trying to carry a burden his father had carried. The tracking stage reveals these patterns. You're looking for the invisible threads connecting your physical symptoms to your emotional landscape. Most people discover within just a few days that their symptoms aren't random at all. They cluster around certain types of emotional triggers. They intensify on anniversary dates their conscious mind has forgotten, but their body remembers. They appear after interactions with specific people connected to their loss. You're building a map that shows you exactly where your grief lives in your body and what activates it. Keep your body map journal for at least 2 weeks, but ideally a month, so you can see patterns across time. You're looking for the recurring connections between feeling and sensation, between emotional experience and physical manifestation. The second stage is reconnect, and this is where you move from observing your body to actually dialoguing with it. This might feel strange at first, especially if you've spent years ignoring your body's signals or seeing symptoms as interruptions to push through. But your body has been trying to communicate with you all along. Now you're going to listen. Here's the practice. When you notice a physical symptom, whether it's the tight chest, the clenched jaw, the exhausted heaviness in your limbs, place your hand directly on that part of your body. Feel the warmth of your hand. Feel the sensation underneath your palm. Then ask it directly, out loud if you're alone, or silently if you're not, "What emotion are you holding for me?" Then, and this is critical, you write whatever answer emerges without filtering, editing, or dismissing it. You're not analyzing whether it makes sense. You're not judging whether it's reasonable. You're transcribing what your body says. For some people, words come immediately. The answer might be, "I'm holding your rage at him for leaving," or "I'm carrying the sadness you won't let yourself feel," or "I'm storing the fear that you'll forget her." For other people, images come instead of words. You might see a specific scene, a face, a room, a moment. Write it down. For some, it's just a knowing, a feeling tone that you then translate into language as best you can. Jennifer tried this with her chronic stomach issues. When she put her hand on her abdomen and asked what it was holding, the immediate answer that came was, "The words you never said to him before he died." She'd been having digestive problems for 8 months since her brother's sudden death. Her stomach was literally holding the conversations that never happened, the unfinished business that had nowhere to go. When Michael did this practice with his persistent shoulder pain, his body's answer was the weight of taking care of everyone else's grief while ignoring your own.
He was the strong one in his family after his wife died, the one who planned the funeral, managed the paperwork, supported his kids. His shoulders were carrying what he wouldn't let himself acknowledge. The reconnect stage works because it shifts your relationship with your symptoms from adversarial to collaborative. You stop seeing your body as broken and start seeing it as communicative. You're not fighting your symptoms, you're learning from them. Do this practice every time you notice a significant symptom, and keep a separate section in your journal for these body dialogues. Over time, you'll get faster at it. The answers will come more readily. You're rebuilding trust between your conscious awareness and your body's wisdom. The third stage is activate, and this is where the method moves from insight to integration. Understanding what your body is holding is valuable, but it's not enough to resolve the physical symptoms. You need to engage your nervous system in processing what talking and thinking alone cannot touch. This is where bilateral movement comes in.
Bilateral movement means any activity that activates both sides of your body in an alternating rhythm. Walking, where your left foot, right foot, creates a natural bilateral pattern. Tapping alternately on your knees or shoulders, swaying side to side, even eye movements, looking left then right repeatedly. This type of movement does something profound in your brain. It engages both hemispheres, it regulates your nervous system, and it allows emotional processing that gets stuck when you're sitting still and just thinking. Here's how to use it. Take the grief memory or emotional trigger that your tracking and reconnecting stages revealed as connected to your symptom. Now, while engaging in bilateral movement, mentally replay that memory or situation. If you're walking, walk at a comfortable pace and let the memory unfold in your mind, like watching a film. If you're doing bilateral tapping, tap alternately on your knees while you think about the emotional content. The key is to stay in gentle motion while you're engaging with the difficult material. What this does is signal to your nervous system that you're not stuck, you're not frozen, you're moving through it, literally and metaphorically. Denise had debilitating migraines that her tracking revealed were connected to suppressed anger at her husband, who died by suicide. Her anger felt forbidden, wrong. How could she be angry at someone who was suffering so much? But her body was holding it anyway, and her head was paying the price. During the activate stage, she would walk around her neighborhood for 20 minutes while letting herself mentally replay the moments she felt most angry, the unanswered questions, the feeling of abandonment mixed with her love and grief. She wasn't trying to fix or change these feelings. She was letting her body move while her mind processed. After 3 weeks of this practice, her migraines decreased by 60%. Her body was finally getting to process what had been locked in place. The activate stage works because trauma and grief literally get stuck in your nervous system as incomplete responses. Your body wanted to run, fight, scream, collapse, but you couldn't. You had to hold it together. You had to function. You had to be appropriate. The bilateral movement creates a safe container for your nervous system to finally complete those interrupted responses. You're not re-traumatizing yourself. You're giving your body a chance to finish processing what it started but couldn't complete in the moment. Aim to do this practice 3 to 5 times a week for at least 15 to 20 minutes. You can use different bilateral movements on different days. The consistency matters more than the specific type of movement. The fourth stage is channel, and this is where you give your body permission to physically express and release the specific emotions it's been storing. Different emotions have different physical signatures and require different release channels. Fear wants to shake and tremble. Anger wants to push, punch, or throw. Sadness wants to curl up, rock, and weep. Your body knows exactly what it needs to do. Your job is to create safe circumstances where it can do it. This isn't about catharsis for catharsis's sake. This is about completing the physical gesture that grief demanded, but circumstances prevented. Here's what this looks like in practice. If your body is holding fear, which often shows up as shakiness, muscle tension, or a feeling of being frozen, you need to let yourself shake. Stand in a private space, put on music if it helps, and literally shake your body.
Start with your hands, then your arms. Let it move into your shoulders, your torso, your legs. Let your body tremble and vibrate. This is what animals do naturally after a threat to discharge the stress hormones from their system. You're doing the same thing. Shake for at least 5 to 10 minutes, longer if your body wants to keep going. If your body is holding anger, which often manifests as jaw tension, tight shoulders, or back pain, you need to give it something to push against. Push hard against a wall, as if you're trying to move it. Punch a mattress or couch cushions. Throw ice cubes into a bathtub or shower where they'll shatter safely. Rip up newspapers or cardboard. Your body needs to feel its own strength and express the aggressive energy that anger carries. Do this until your muscles are genuinely fatigued, until you feel the tension discharge. If your body is holding sadness, which often appears as chest heaviness, lethargy, or a feeling of being weighted down, you need to assume positions that allow grief to move. Curl into child's pose on the floor, forehead to the ground, arms extended or wrapped around yourself. Rock gently. Let your body be small and protected. Put your hand on your heart, and if tears come, let them flow without trying to stop them or speed them up.
Your body is completing the crying it couldn't do before. If tears don't come, that's fine too. You're still giving your body the posture and permission it needs. Robert's chronic neck pain was connected to suppressed anger at his father's long decline from dementia. He felt guilty being angry. His father couldn't help it. But the anger was real, and his neck was holding it. During the channel stage, he would go into his garage, set a timer for 10 minutes, and hit a heavy bag while letting himself say out loud all the things he could never say. The physical exertion combined with vocalization gave his anger somewhere to go besides his neck. Within weeks, his range of motion improved dramatically, and the constant pain that had been his companion for 2 years began to subside. The channel stage might feel intense, even scary at first. You might worry that if you start crying, you'll never stop, or if you let yourself feel anger, it will consume you. This is a common fear, but it's based on the belief that emotions are infinite when they're actually quite finite. When you give an emotion a complete expression, it moves through and dissipates. It's the suppression that makes emotions seem endless because they never get to complete their cycle. Start with just 5 to 10 minutes of channeling at a time. You're in control. You can stop if you need to, but give your body the chance to finish what it started. Do this practice at least once or twice a week, more often if your symptoms are severe. The fifth stage is evolve, and this is where you shift from reactive to proactive. You've been learning to read your body's signals and respond to symptoms when they appear. Now you're going to create a practice that prevents the accumulation in the first place. This is what transforms the method from a technique you use when you're in crisis to a way of living that keeps grief flowing instead of stuck. The evolution stage is built on a daily grief check-in ritual, a short practice where you proactively feel your emotions before they need to become symptoms. Here's what a daily grief check-in looks like. Set aside 10 to 15 minutes at the same time each day, preferably morning or evening, somewhere private where you won't be interrupted. Sit comfortably and place both hands on your heart center. Close your eyes if that feels safe, then ask yourself 3 questions. First, what am I carrying today that belongs to my grief? Just notice what arises. Maybe it's a memory, a fear, a wave of missing someone. Second, where do I feel this in my body right now? Scan through your body and notice sensation. Maybe your throat is tight. Maybe your shoulders are lifted. Maybe your belly is clenched. Third, what does this part of me need right now? And then give it that. Maybe you need to cry for 3 minutes. Maybe you need to put your hand on that tight place and breathe into it. Maybe you need to journal a letter to the person you lost. You're training your body to trust that emotions can be expressed directly and immediately, that they don't need to be converted into physical symptoms to get your attention. Christina had been using the first 4 stages to address her chronic fatigue, which was connected to carrying everyone's grief about her son's death while never expressing her own. The evolution stage transformed her experience.
Each morning, she did her 10-minute check-in. Some days, it was quick, just acknowledging the sadness and letting herself cry briefly. Other days, it opened into deeper processing. But the consistent practice meant her body stopped needing to shut down completely through fatigue to make her pay attention. She was paying attention voluntarily. Her energy levels stabilized, and she stopped having the crashes that used to keep her in bed for days at a time. The evolution stage is where this method becomes sustainable. You're not doing intensive emotional work every single day. You're doing brief, consistent check-ins that keep the channels open. Think of it like dental hygiene. You brush your teeth for 2 minutes twice a day to prevent major problems. This is emotional hygiene. You check in with your grief for 10 to 15 minutes daily to prevent it from accumulating into chronic physical symptoms. Some days the check-in will feel neutral. You don't have much to process. Other days it will be intense, and you might extend it to 20 or 30 minutes. You're following your body's needs rather than imposing a rigid structure. I know what some of you are thinking right now. This sounds too simple. My symptoms are serious, chronic. They've been seen by multiple doctors. How could just tracking them and talking to my body and moving possibly resolve something this entrenched? I understand that doubt. We've been taught that complex problems require complex solutions. But here's what you need to understand. Your symptoms are complex in their manifestation, but often remarkably simple in their origin. They're the body's way of holding what the mind and heart couldn't process. When you give the emotion a direct pathway to expression, the body doesn't need the symptom anymore. The symptom was never the problem. It was the solution, the only solution your body had available. Now you're giving it better options. Others of you might be thinking, but I've already done therapy. I've talked about my grief extensively. Why hasn't that resolved my physical symptoms? Because talking about grief and processing grief through your body are two different things. Grief lives in your nervous system, your muscles, your tissues. Cognitive understanding is valuable, but it doesn't discharge what's stored somatically. That's why the bilateral movement and the physical channeling stages are so critical. You're not just understanding your grief differently. You're completing the physical responses your body never got to complete. You're working at the level where the symptoms actually live. Some of you are afraid that if you start feeling your grief this directly, you'll be overwhelmed, you'll fall apart, you won't be able to function in your daily life. This is the fear that keeps most people stuck. But here's what actually happens. When you create structured, boundaried time to feel your grief, it stops leaking out uncontrollably at random moments. When you give your emotions direct expression, they don't need to hijack your body through symptoms that disable you. You actually become more functional, not less, because you're no longer using all your energy to suppress and manage what wants to be felt. The trace method gives you control and agency. You're choosing when and how to process. You're not at the mercy of your symptoms anymore. And yes, some of you have physical symptoms that have organic medical causes unrelated to grief. This method is not a substitute for appropriate medical care. But even when symptoms have medical origins, emotional factors often intensify them, and addressing the grief component can reduce severity even if it doesn't eliminate the condition entirely. Work with your healthcare providers and also work with your body's emotional wisdom. They're not mutually exclusive approaches. Here's why this method works when so many other approaches haven't. It addresses the actual mechanism by which grief becomes physical. Your body stores unprocessed emotion as a protective measure. The symptoms are not random. They're purposeful, even if that purpose is no longer serving you. When you learn to read the signals, reconnect with what you're storing, activate your nervous system's natural processing abilities, channel the emotions directly, and evolve into a practice that prevents future accumulation, you're working with your body's design rather than against it. You're not forcing anything, you're not overriding anything. You're facilitating what your body has been trying to do all along, process and release what it's holding so it can return to balance.
The research supports this. Studies on somatic experiencing, bilateral stimulation, and emotion-focused therapy all demonstrate that engaging the body in emotional processing produces better outcomes than cognitive approaches alone for trauma and grief. Your nervous system has its own intelligence, its own pathways for healing. The TRACE method simply gives you access to those pathways in a structured, manageable way. You're not making something new happen. You're allowing something natural to finally complete. So now you understand the sorrow-to-signal method. You've seen how your body isn't betraying you with these symptoms, but rather speaking a language you're now learning to fluently understand. You know the three steps: locate and listen, translate the message, and respond with integration. But knowledge without action is just interesting information. So let's talk about exactly what you're going to do, starting right this second. Right now, while you're still listening to these words, I want you to do something deceptively simple. Take one deep breath, and on the exhale, mentally scan your body from head to toe. Don't judge what you find. Don't try to fix anything. Just notice. Is there tension in your jaw, heaviness in your chest, a knot in your stomach, tightness in your shoulders? Just acknowledge it. Say internally, "I notice you. I'm listening now." That's it. You've just taken the first step of the embodied integrator's journey. You've begun the conversation with your body that grief has been trying to start all along. Today, within the next few hours, you're going to complete your first full sorrow-to-signal practice. Set aside just 15 minutes when you can be uninterrupted. Find a comfortable place to sit or lie down, close your eyes, and do the body scan again. But this time, go slower and deeper. When you locate an intensity that has intensity or draws your attention, stay there. Place your hand on that part of your body if you can reach it. Now ask the question, "What are you trying to tell me? What do I need to know?" Don't force an answer. Let it arise naturally. It might come as words, as an image, as a memory, or as an emotion that suddenly wells up. Whatever comes, receive it. This is the translation phase, and your body has been waiting for someone to finally listen. Then respond. Based on what your body revealed, what does it need? If the message was about unexpressed anger at the person you lost, maybe you need to write them a letter you'll never send. If the message was about permission to rest, maybe you need to cancel one commitment today. If the message was about needing connection, maybe you reach out to one person who understands. Keep it simple. One small, concrete action that honors what your body just told you. And here's something important. After you take that action, return to the physical sensation and notice if it has shifted. This feedback loop teaches your body that you're truly listening, which makes it trust you more and communicate more clearly over time. Tomorrow, you're going to begin building this into a daily practice, but not the way you might expect. You're not going to set a specific time for a formal practice yet. Instead, tomorrow is about catching moments throughout your day. Set 3 alarms on your phone at random times. When each alarm goes off, pause whatever you're doing for 60 seconds. Quick body scan. Notice the strongest sensation. Ask it one question. What do you need right now? And if possible, give it something small in that moment. A glass of water. 3 deep breaths. A walk to the window. A text to a friend. You're training yourself to live in constant dialogue with your body's wisdom rather than making it wait for scheduled appointments. This week, days 2 through 7, you're going to deepen and expand. By day 2, add a morning practice. Before you get out of bed, spend 5 minutes doing a full body scan and asking, "How am I carrying my grief today? And what do I need to move through this day with integrity?" Let this intelligence guide one decision you make about how you structure your day. By day 3, start a physical symptoms journal. Each evening, write down what physical sensations you noticed, what you think they were communicating, and how you responded. You're creating a translation guide between your body's language and your conscious understanding.
By day 4, begin to notice patterns. Does your neck always tighten when you're avoiding a difficult conversation? Does your stomach hurt when you're betraying your own needs? You're becoming fluent now. Days 5 through 7, introduce movement as response. When you identify a physical symptom and translate its message, experiment with embodied responses, gentle stretching, shaking, dancing, even just tensing and releasing the area that's speaking. Grief energy gets trapped in our tissues, and sometimes the most effective response is physical release rather than cognitive processing. Notice what your body responds to. You're building your personal healing vocabulary. By day 30, here's what will have shifted. You'll wake up, and instead of that immediate anxiety about how your body feels, you'll have curiosity. Those mysterious symptoms that used to frighten you will be familiar friends, each one a doorway to deeper healing. You'll catch grief moving through you in real time and know exactly how to work with it. That tension in your chest won't send you spiraling into health anxiety. You'll recognize it as the signal that you need to cry, or speak a truth, or honor a memory. You'll have integrated dozens of pieces of your grief that were stuck in your body, and you'll feel lighter, more energized, more yourself. People will notice something different about you. You'll move through the world as someone who trusts their own internal guidance system because you've proven to yourself over and over that your body is wise and you know how to listen. This is who you are now, the embodied integrator, someone who reads their physical symptoms as the map they truly are, someone who honors their body as a partner in healing, not an obstacle. Someone who moves through grief with the intelligence that lives in their bones, their breath, their beating heart. Listen to this episode again in a week. You'll hear things you missed the first time because you'll be listening from a more integrated place. Each time you return to these principles, you'll deepen your practice. Your body has been waiting for you to learn its language. Now you have. Now, go practice.